So from the interviews, there will be more interviews. I can think, and from the questions I get, I can think of the best way how to guide you. We have decided we will read the text, do this more theoretical part in the evening, and do more the practical part in the morning. But actually, we don't need to stick to this rule. Now, from what I understood, the emphasis of this short retreat is shamatha. And it would be very useful. I will not teach you all the stuff about shamatha as explained in the Visuddhimagga, which is like the Bible of meditation in the Theravada tradition. I have been trained in this system. Now I will explain briefly. If you have questions, we can explain more and more in detail about how the shamatha meditation is explained in the northern tradition. The northern tradition in China, and where Buddhism spread from China, and in Tibet, where Buddhism spread from Tibet. So we have three motherlands of Buddhism, India, China, and Tibet. Buddhism spread from these places. Now, in the northern tradition means in the tradition which is based on Sanskrit transmission, southern tradition which is based on Pali transmission. In the northern tradition, we explain, and it is important in a way, because we are dealing with a little section of the chapter which also explains the shamatha practice in the northern tradition. It is also in this chapter, Shravaka Bhumi, of the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra. So I will explain briefly this system. And those of you who have studied Theravada, you will find it very useful. These two systems, they can be used interchangeably. They complement each other. Finally, we have explained Buddhism is just the science of skillful means how to attain peace. When you have attained peace, you don't need any skillful means, you stay in peace. So the good horse is the horse which runs best, and you can use all kinds of horses to get there. What is important, you get what you need. And that is the peace of mind which lasts. Now, in northern tradition, we explain the shamatha on the base of so-called nine steps. They are called citta sthiti. Citta means mind, sthiti means position. So when we practice shamatha, we, so to say, place our mind in nine positions. And it is a gradual process. In this gradual process, as we have mentioned, the emphasis is not on attaining the jhanas, but emphasis is on mastering the mind. That is what is Yogacara about. The mastery of mind is the state of continuous balance. This is what we need. Actually, when we attain a jhana, it is only a little step towards this process. Because when we attain jhana, still we will find the mind will be fluctuating. When we attain the liberation, the mind will stop fluctuate. And this is the attaining of jhana is then only a step. But it is a very useful step because we can use jhana for vipassana. And then the vipassana will get deeper. So we have also explained in the morning, this is very important aspect, that in the Theravada tradition, for some reason or other, they always tend to separate shamatha and vipassana. Now, in the northern tradition, even in the tradition which explains how to become an arahat, that means the tradition of the disciples, the emphasis is rather on combining shamatha and vipassana. When you read the commentaries of Theravada, so shamatha is described only as a resting place. There is a wonderful simile which the master Pavak especially always likes to use. The aim, you get liberation, because liberation means you get by wisdom. There are three steps to liberation. You may study the Visuddhimagga, I don't want to expatiate, but first you reduce the defilements by practicing the discipline, sila. By practicing sila, you can only restrain the outer manifestations of the defilements. So that means you cannot restrain the defilements of the mind, they will still arise, but they will not affect your bodily and vocal behavior. But still, you may have some unwholesome thoughts. Now, when you are in a jhana, when you are in a deep concentration, then there is no place for unwholesome thought. This is called vikambana pahana. You shake off the defilements from the mind, but you only shake them off from the mind in the state of deep concentration. When you leave that state, then the defilements may arise again. But you will become, the jhanas make us very sensitive, so you will become more sensitive to the defilement than if you don't have the jhana. Because the state, we have explained, the state of jhana brings incredible sensitivity into the sensations, into the perceptions, and they are the formations of the mind. When they become very sensitive, so you live through the defilements even more intensively. So you get samvega, you are shaken for more practice. So many stories in Indian literature, even in the Western religions, of the yogis who fall into the temptation, and then having fallen into the temptation, they are shaken, and then they get the liberation. Then it is only wisdom, as Visuddhimagga explains, which can uproot the defilements. only wisdom can do the job. But the wisdom needs concentration, otherwise it cannot do the job. But when the concentration and wisdom come together, strictly speaking, when it really happens in an intensive way, then the middle path opens. Then the eightfold noble path appears as one. Then the mind has the power to uproot the defilements. Normally it does not appear as one. When we have meditate concentration, we don't contemplate the right view or the right thought, or we don't contemplate the right speech and the right we may contemplate the mindfulness, the effort, but we don't put them together into one. They appear as separate entities, but only when there is object which cannot be grasped, they all come as one. Then the defilements can be uprooted. So now you have learned a little bit, it is very important, the Yogacara approach, this science of Shamatha and Vipassana in the northern tradition, in a way, is all based on Yogacara. The Madhyamika only teaches you the, in fact, about the correct view, which is the essence of wisdom and the correct thinking. But not how to get the correct, right concentration, and step by step how to get the mind in the practice of Vipassana. You will never get any detailed description. Only in Yogacara you get it. And the peculiarity of Yogacara is that actually all objects we experience are just images in the mind. You can only find it out in meditation. If you're not in meditation, you don't find it. In meditation, you are completely involved with your meditation object, right? So whatever happens only appears in the mind. Normally we are not aware of it. We think that the objects outside are real. But in meditation, everything crops up only in the mind. Nowhere else. That's why it is called Yogacara. Yoga, achara means conduct accordance to the yoga. Conduct accordance to the yoga is pratyahara, to withdraw the senses from the outer objects. Then you can get the wisdom based on samadhi. It is the same principle in yoga, same principle in Buddhism, withdrawing the senses. So the withdrawal of the senses happens in nine stages, which are called the abodes of the mind on the on the way of learning shamatha, learning peace. Now the difference between Yogacara and Theravada is, because everything is just mental images, so when your mind is thinking and in concentration, deep concentration, you might have experienced there is always tendency of mind to think. Why? Because the concentrated mind is a deep mind, and the deep mind is close to the base of the mind. call it bhavanga, call it alaya. So unless you protect your mind in deep concentration, it has a clear tendency to sink. So when the mind is sinking, you use a differentiated image. Now when you practice vipassana, you are always changing the image and analyzing the different characteristics of different images. Then the mind easily gets excited. So you need to stabilize it. How you stabilize it? By not changing the qualities of the image. Staying with the same quality of the same image. Then the mind will stabilize. So you can, as explained in the scripture, we started explaining the five aggregates. You can, when you investigate the five aggregates, you need the mind in balance. And the mind will be in balance when you change these images you, so to say, fabricate in the mind. Because the mind itself has no images. You put the images into the mind. This is very deep psychology, which one has to experiment with, think about deeply, understand deeply. That's why we actually only know what we remember. Now, you can change the images then according to your need. When you master the shamatha, you will go through the process of maintaining the same image. And this happens in the nine stages. It does not mean that you cannot change the image in these nine stages. You can change. But once you have mastered the shamatha, the mind will remain in perfect balance. And with this perfect balance, you can do whatever you like. You can go into the jhana, you can practice vipassana, change the images, but change the images with understanding. That is the mastery of attention. The learning meditation is learning mastery of attention. So you can make the pure object impure if you start clinging to it. You can make the impure object pure if you go into samadhi on it. This is the wonder of the mind. So you can balance according to the need. We should not, this is the great advantage of the northern tradition, we should not get stuck in the set forms. The base scripture of the Yogacara is called Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, which literally means liberation from the sandhi, from the knots. Just exactly as Visuddhimagga explains, we are knotted inside, we are knotted outside. Who can untie these knots? The one who practices the three shikshas, the discipline, the concentration and the wisdom. Exactly the same idea, but put in a different way. We are knotted inside, knotted outside, how to untie these knots. The only way is, as far as Buddhism is concerned, is shamatha and vipassana. And the samatha and vipassana, if you attain the state of prashabdi, we have learned, this is a difference. You don't need to have the object of liberation in front of you. When you have the state of prashabdi, which gives you the understanding of the real nature of the mind, Buddha is teaching that the defilements, they are guests to the mind. They are not innate to the mind. As a wise Shariputra explains, the white ox is not bondage to the black ox. The black ox is not bondage to the white ox. It is the bond between them which is the bondage. So the mind is not the obstacle to the objects. Objects are not obstacle to the mind. It is the bond between them which makes us bound, which makes us tight, which makes us knotted inside and outside. So the shamatha training is to bring the peace to the mind. And this is, you can use it to practice jhanas, you can use it to practice vipassana. But unless there is peace in the mind, then whatever you do will not be thorough. So the ninth stage of this training is called samadhi. But samadhi actually means literally samyak adhana. Adhana means placing, and samyak, the correct placing of the mind. This is what is really meant by samadhi. That's why in Indian tradition, no matter whether Buddhism or Jainism or Samkhya or Vedanta, in all Buddhist tradition, in all Indian traditions, the samadhi means liberation. When we speak of some Baba, he has gone into samadhi, it means he has attained liberation, which means he has attained the abode of the mind in reality. For the Buddhist, the reality is anatta, the selflessness. Because of selflessness, you have nothing to hold to. Then it is complete freedom. When there is nothing to hold to, it is a complete freedom. So it is a different approach, and this approach is most suitable for understanding the real self. The Buddha also speaks finally of the real self. The real self is a non-self. So now come back to these abodes of shamatha. The first abode of shamatha is called sthapayati. Sthapayati means he places the mind. Same explanation you will find in the Visuddhimagga. Training in meditation means placing the mind, especially in shamatha, placing the mind on the meditation object. Now, emphasis in Yogacara is all objects. No exception, they are mental objects. All that we experience are just mental objects. So you place the mind on the mental object, means you place the mind inside. With the help of a suitable object like in-breath and out-breath, by observing the in-breath and out-breath, you turn the mind inside. Is it clear? When your mind is outside, you will not see the breath clearly. Only when the mind is turned on itself, you will experience the breath clearly, right? This should be, so the breath is the means of turning the mind inside. It is the best means because the breath is always with us. We don't need to search for anything. So when the mind gets crazy, you pay attention to the breath and you can cool down easily. You don't need any search for any device, any visualizations or whatsoever. It's there always. When we die, what will happen? No more breath. So the doctor will put the mirror in front of the nose, when it is does not get wet, mouth. So invite priest, amen, or Buddhist monk to chant Amitabha or Abhidhamma in the Theravada countries. But actually, when you practice meditation, you can many stories. When you practice deep samadhi, the breath will stop, everything will stop. So it happened many stories. They put the yogi on the funeral pile and he jumps up. So in the meditation on the breath is all about the sublimation of the breath. And you sublimate the breath through shamatha and vipassana. It is also explained in Visuddhimagga. Both sublimate the breath. Why? Because of the touch with wisdom. Touch with wisdom is a touch with shamatha and vipassana. And when there is touch with wisdom, what will happen? Prashabdi. There is clarity and relaxation. This is true in Qigong, this is true in yoga, this is true in Buddhism. So it all starts with placing the mind on the mental object. This is how you start the trip of shamatha. Exactly the same thing explained in Visuddhimagga. When you turn the mind inside, then you get the mental image of the object. You may not get any light or anything. People think that when there appears a light or a sublime image, that is placing the mind inside. No. Placing the mind inside means simply placing the mind on the meditation object. According to Yogacara, all objects are mental objects. But you, when you practice meditation, you see that the mental object is that object which maintains the mind on the object. That is why sthapayati. You cannot, if your mind is outside, you cannot maintain the mind on the object. You have to use a mental consciousness to stabilize the image, otherwise it is monkey mind. And what does monkey mind do? Wherever there is impact on the senses, it runs after that sense which makes the impact. This is the mind outside. So if there is some sound, it runs after the sound. If it likes the sound, then it is very happy. If it dislikes the sound, it becomes depressed. This is a monkey mind. When the bodily touch, some pain is more clear than the sound, then this starts dancing. And when then some memory of a taste comes into mind, that it starts thinking what I'm going to eat for lunch. Then some visual impression catches the attention, so it runs after any object that comes into the that makes impact on the senses. Which object makes more impact on the senses, the mind will run to that object. Paok Sayado uses a very wonderful simile. I don't know where he got it, but it is very nice simile. You imagine the five senses as five black stones on a surface of a drum. That drum represents the mental consciousness. Then when the one of the five when the one stone makes impact on the drum, then all the other stones are also moved, right? But the mind will go to that stone which jumps higher, which makes more noise. This is a monkey mind. So whatever sense make more noise, they naturally the mind will run to that stone, to that sense object. So you not in any way in the process of tranquilizing the mind unless you sthapayati, unless you place your mind on the mental object so as to prevent this jumping process. That is called sthapayati. But now you are beginner in the meditation, so beginner in the meditation wants to always grasp and control the object rather than understand the mechanism. This is a natural instinct, wants to dominate the object rather than understand it. So this is called the forceful attention. In the first stages of appeasing the mind, the meditator who is not experienced, he is using the forceful attention. And the forceful attention is the enemy of mindfulness. When we use a forceful attention, the mindfulness does not come to expression, because the mindfulness means natural concentration. You concentrate it and at the same time you are aware of the whole. Then it is mindfulness. Otherwise, that's why in Buddhism we differentiate right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness. What is right mindfulness? That you use in meditation. You concentrate on your meditation object, does not need to be meditation object, whatever you concentrate on, but you are aware of the whole. So you can react in an appropriate way. In a forceful attention, you don't react in the appropriate way because you want to grasp. So what is forceful, what is the wrong mindfulness? Like a cat catching a mouse. Cat, very mindful. An example of mindfulness. But its mindfulness is wrong mindfulness, because it is mindful to catch the mouse and eat it. So this is wrong mindfulness.
How is forced attention different from counting the breaths?
The counting the breaths should not be connected with forceful attention. You should count the breaths naturally, not control it. if you control it, then that counting will not bring the fruit of following and placing. You have to start somewhere to practice mindfulness. And you usually start with forceful attention, but it will not bring you into clarity and relaxation. Impossible. And only in clarity and relaxation you can combine shamatha and vipassana according to your need. You can change the differentiated image, non-differentiated image according to your need. If you don't have this conditioning, you will not be able to do it. You will always get stuck. And this state of pliancy only comes in more advanced stages of placing the mind on the object. So the forceful attention that is called, the Sanskrit has such a wonderful expression, bala avahana. Avahana means flowing the mind into the object. So the mind flows into the object by force. Avahana, what a wonderful word. Our mind flows into the object. If it flows by force, it means you cannot balance. That is forceful mindfulness. Yes?
Some force or some, when you're working with the breath, to bring the attention back to the breath needs a little bit of, maybe force is not the right word.
Yes, sure. But you have to bring it back by mindfulness, not by force. If you bring it by force, it will not be smooth.
Force may be a little harsh word, but you...
Well, we are discussing about words. This is experience. So don't bother about the words. Of course there will be some force. When there is will, there will be some force. But the force will not be dominating factor. The mindfulness will be dominating factor. This is the difference. So the bala avahana only happens in the first two stages. The first stage is called stapayati. You place the object on the mental image, because you don't pay attention to the five senses, to these five stones jumping, in order to tranquilize the mind. Okay. What's wrong?
What I've discovered over the years is two things in practice that help with what you're talking about. Interest in the object, in the breath in this case, with an inner receptive attitude rather than trying to get, but to receive.
Well, you are jumping forward. It's all explained. But we cannot explain everything at once. So let me...
rather than that, it's this.
Yeah, but it will not come immediately and it will not come by thinking. It has to come stage by stage. That is why I explain these stages. So let me speak out. So these first two stages, first is called stapayati, the second samstapayati. Sam means together. So at first you just place your mind on the meditation object, because you decide you stay with the breath, I stay with the breath. But you will see it does not work. So you are frustrated. But in this stage, many meditators, they think, oh, maybe I should do something else. This not meditation, not for me. So you have to get frustrated to see that this is not the way. Otherwise, you will not continue in meditation. So you have to see very clearly that this by bringing the mind to the object by force will not do. So despite the you learn shamatha in order to experience the happiness, because the shamatha is a state of happiness. The real happiness is peace, and the shamatha literally means peace. Shamayate means to appease. Shamatha is the method of appeasement. When the mind is not appeased, it has no wisdom. Only the appeased mind has wisdom to see things as they really are. Otherwise, we are only dragged by our instincts. That is the monkey mind. Now, despite you are in the beginning, people think, I meditate, I get enlightenment, I get something, I get great bliss, but it does not come. Why? Because they don't have the real motivation, the correct motivation, the correct understanding. They have not studied much about meditation. So they only get confused because it does not work as they wish. But one has to actually experience in his own body and mind that this forceful attention is not the way. When one stay with the meditation, so this placing will have continuity. It's called samsthapayati. When the staying with the meditation object has some continuity, then there will come a certain degree of the confidence that this is a way. So when you can have continuity on the mental image you are meditating on, according to Yogacara, all objects of meditation are only mental images. And this is a very useful approach. And actually you experience it when you draw the mind inside. All that appears is just mental images. Even the sound becomes a mental image. So because you are maybe new to meditation, when you drawing the mind inside, then appears the sign, the sound. So you will get a shock. Why? Because you have drawn the mind inside, then it has intensified the feeling. But you don't have yet the necessary detachment and understanding. So, when you continue, because you have some understanding, you have the knowledge, you have some understanding that you have to practice certain virtues, you have to have patience, you have to have endurance, you have to have effort, correct effort, and so on. Then you continue, and you see this bala avahana, this flowing of the mind to the object by force, you see it as the thought. Then what appears? The mindfulness starts crystallizing. So you don't need force, sheer force, to bring you back to the object. The mindfulness starts doing the job. This is a third stage, which is called upasthapayati. Upa means near. So that means your mind does not leave the object unnoticed and start thinking about something else, and then I'm meditating. Your mind will naturally notice as soon as the object loses clarity and bring it not by force back but by attention. Attention is that which stabilizes the mind. When the mind is stabilized, what happens? Whatever movement there is in the mind and also in the body, please notice it, that movement will be flowing. What is a sign of forceful attention in the body and in the mind? The movement which is has no flowing, no fluency. The mindfulness brings the fluency into the body, into the speech, and into the mind. So because you are stabilized on the object of your attention, so you remember that object, so your mind does not lose the object, and it is stabilized on whatever object it pays attention to. So there will be smoothness in whatever you do, in speaking, in moving, in thinking. This is what mindfulness brings to the mind. So this is the upastapayati, the third stage, when the mind immediately notices when you are losing the object or the clarity of the object is going away, and it will bring back the stability into the mind and stay on that object without abandoning it completely. With a forceful attention, you can still abandon the object of meditation completely, get involved in all kinds of sensations and thoughts, and remember after a long, long time, aha, I'm here meditating. Good morning. But in this stage, upastapayati, it cannot happen. So whenever you lose the object, you bring it back immediately by the force of mindfulness. So the force of mindfulness starts developing. This is upastapayati. Then when this force of mindfulness has, from this stage until the one-pointedness of the mind, this is called the flowing of the mind to the object with interruptions. That means there are still ups and downs. And as you go higher and higher, these ups and downs will be less and less. In the state of one-pointedness, ups and downs will not be anymore there, because the effort is same. But here you are still using different effort, because the mind has tendency to sinking and the tendency of arising excitement. This is very useful for understanding this process of appeasing the mind. The next stage will be when the mindfulness has ripened, and that stage is called avastapayati. Avastapayati, ava means down. Your mind has settled down on the object. According to the Abhidhamma, the characteristic of sati is apilapana. When the mind is not wobbling on the object, the mindfulness has ripened. When the mind is not shaking on the object, the mindfulness is ripened. When the mindfulness is ripened, the awareness can come more and more clear to the mind. And when awareness, which is wisdom basically, comes more and more clear to the mind, then you can clean up the mess of the mind, clean up the defilements. But the awareness cannot have function unless the mind has ripened by the power of mindfulness. So only when the power of mindfulness is ripened, the power of awareness can clean up the mess. So in the fourth stage, you may start having some idea what the prashrabdhi really means, what the clarity and relaxation, what the pliancy really means, but it will still not be a real appeasement. But because the mind is stabilized on the object and you don't have yet a deeper experience of the deeper states of the mind, so the stabilization of the mind on the object without much awareness will bring the tendency of the mind to sinking. So in this stage, the gross tendency of the mind to excitement will be not there anymore. You will not leave the object, but you may still have the tendency of sinking, which will make the object not clear. And you cannot practice shamatha and vipassana with a non-clear object. But you may still feel some satisfaction. Some people I have in my experience of teaching meditation, I have met people who meditated like even 20 years. They only get into the superficial state of well-being, little bit dozing off. But this is neither shamatha nor vipassana. But they feel, in a way, they feel quite comfortable. But this is not shamatha, this is not vipassana, this will not allow them to deepen their understanding of meditation. But they may be thinking they are meditating and they are experienced meditators even, but without a teacher who enlightens them on this, they can get so easily stuck. So that is importance of a qualified teacher who can discover that immediately. So only when the mindfulness has ripened, then the awareness can sweep the threshold and make the mind clean. So the next stage is called Dhammayati. Dhammayati means subdue. Subdue this tendency of the mind to stay with a non-clear object, which leads to thinking. And then the prashrabdhi, the clarity and relaxation cannot come to clear expression. So you cannot really manipulate the mind, the images into your mind for your maximum benefit. Impossible. So in this stage, Dhammayati, you then abandon the gross states of thinking and the gross states of excitement of the mind, and you enter the sixth stage, which is a crucial stage in meditation, which is called shamayati. You appease the mind. There are still tendencies of mind to thinking and tendencies of mind to excitement, but they are very slight. So the pliancy, relaxation, and clarity comes clearly to expression. So this is really becomes a satisfactory state of mind. And how it goes further, we will describe next time. Too many information leads to what? Mental indigestion. Either mental diarrhea or mental constipation. So let us leave it here for today, and we will continue tomorrow. So check in your own mind how it works. It does not mean don't take these stages as something static. They are changing. This is the advantage of this yogacara approach, that it always in the Theravada one can easily get stuck in thinking must be like this, must be like that, must be like that. And here you should have a very, very clear image of these states changing. But once you have a deeper experience of these deeper stages of peace, you don't go back to or minimally getting back to the very low stages of the forceful attention. Why? Because the peace of mind is teaching you. You feel the forceful attention as something harmful. So this is advantage of meditation on the breath. Once you are used to meditation on the breath, in this world we live in, we have to rush here, rush there, do this, go to airport, catch the train, catch the all get the job and I don't know what, always catching something. So when it is very easy for the mind to get excited, to get crazy, but when you have experience of watching the breath in the state of appeasement, you pay attention to the breath and you see this as a theater. You don't take it too seriously. So you may even have a very deep states of excitement, but they will pass quickly. Why? Because you feel this state of appeasement, kind of a natural state. Okay, so that much for now. We make a 15 minutes break and then we do questions and answers, or we do meditation. What is better? Put it all together, questions and answers, and then meditation. Okay? So let us say take a break for 15 minutes and we go to questions and answers, and then we do meditation. Okay. Thank you. Now you want to record the questions and answers?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.